Yeah, so Brett, I had a weird dream that I had your hair.
Oh wow, how'd it feel?
That was the part of the dream, is I was crafting it. I was just making it. It was a mess, and then I made it, and then it flopped down perfectly like your hair, like just with that middle part, you know, because I got the side part, but it was thick, and it was just, and I look great. I look fantastic.
I think you would look good with my hair.
They've had your hair. If you look at like pictures from Dave, like right when he moved to California,
I did.
He had like long middle hair part, but you had like the shaved underneath like skater thing going on.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Here's the difference, though. The difference is I faked it. Brad really has like a thicker hair set. I had to let it get dirty for like days. I don't know if you guys know about this. You just don't wash it, and that's how you fake thick hair.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Dave, I don't wash my hair. I wash my hair once a week.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the secret.
It is the secret, because my hair didn't always look this good. It really didn't. Yeah. Like, you know, when you know, it's gotten remarkably better since we've known each other.
Like a
and
fine
I used to
line.
Wash it every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I went to this barber. He's like, you are overwashing your hair. It looks like shit.
Yeah. You strip away oils. You strip away.
But here's the thing. I go to the gym almost every day, so I can't not wash it. Do I just rinse it?
Yeah. You can rinse it, and you can also put conditioner in it.
Oh, conditioner is good.
Yeah. So I condition maybe 3 times a week, okay. But I only shampoo once a week.
Okay. So we're going to save the rest of this for our
fashion pod. Yeah, if you were trying to get more, I was like, you try to get more followers. This is how we do it. Like beauty tips with Joe David.
We branch out.
Yeah, look at the three of us. Beauty tips is what we should be talking about.
Exactly.
We want better user experience for our listeners, especially when we get that YouTube channel up and running.
Can I tell you about this dream I had last night?
Oh, please.
I had a bizarre dream where it was, you know, it starred people from my past, a couple of old friends who I haven't spoken to in many years. Yeah. And one of them, this guy, Micah, who I used to work with at Fox, I had to assassinate him.
What?
And we were really good friends. And, you know, he's still a really great guy. I just kind of lost touch with him.
Yeah.
But
that's because he's 6 feet under the ground.
Another old grizzly writer.
In your backyard.
Maybe. Another old grizzly writer who had been in Vietnam. He's another great guy named Bob Locash. Check him out.
Locash. That's my rapper name.
No, here's the rest of the story, though. Bob Locash wrote CB4, the movie CB4.
No, he didn't. That's fantastic.
And he's a good friend of mine, or at least he was, you know, when we were.
He wrote CB4. I love that movie.
And there's a song on the soundtrack. I forget who the artist is. It's called Straight Out of Locash.
That's right.
Bob Locash.
Holy shit.
So he had hired me to assassinate this guy, and he had given me the sniper rifle and everything. So I had to go up to the top of a building and snipe my good friend Micah.
Oh my God.
Who was in a parking garage across the street in his car.
Holy shit.
You know, I sniped him and I took him out perfectly with this perfectly placed like shot.
Good job,
man.
Good job.
Yeah, I was really impressed. Yeah.
Sorry, Micah.
I went over there, and this is really disturbing. I went over to, you know, to deal with the corpse, but he was still breathing. So then I had to try and like kill him with my bare hands. It was not easy. Like I was like choking him, and he was not dying. And it was like, oh my God, it was a disaster.
Okay, did he die?
Eventually, but like,
all right.
You know, this is a long dream of me trying to choke out this poor guy, Micah. Let's make sure that we don't use any of this, because this is really disturbing now. But like, you know, after a very long time in the dream, like he is eventually, you know, dead. And then, Bob and I, we regroup and we leave and everything. Then I wake up and then I think of all the 15 things that I did wrong that are going to get me caught. And that's how I woke up. Like, oh, I'm such an idiot.
Is Mike a listener to the pod?
He might be.
Okay. We're definitely using this.
I mean, I love Micah. He's done nothing to deserve this.
Well, maybe you feel like you've wronged him somehow. Maybe you need to sit down and have coffee with Micah.
I think that's – I mean, both of these guys that were featured in the dream are people that I haven't spoken to in way too long and who I'm very, 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 very close with.
Maybe you think the friendship is dying and it needs attention.
Right.
So you should call Micah. Let's get Mike on the pod. Does he do anything UX related?
I don't know.
No? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Welcome back to the Sucks Podcast. I am your host, Brad.
And I am Dave.
And with us, as always, is producer Joe.
Not the producer.
You are the producer. What does a podcast producer do, Joe?
When you figure it out, let me know and maybe we'll work on it.
Isn't that your job as a producer to figure out what your right. role is?
Yeah. First order of business, Joe. First paycheck will be cut as soon as you answer that question.
Well, this, of course, is a podcast where we talk about design, intentional and otherwise, and all the ways that UX,
user experience design,
impacts us every day. And we are lovers and not experts of UX design.
Sweet, sick lovers.
Sick indeed. We started this podcast as a way to talk about why things were made the way that they are and where those design decisions might have gone off the rails. Welcome back, guys. How are you doing?
Brad, I think the better question is, the hell is going on with you, man? You sound like shit.
Oh, I thought you meant that I sounded like, you know, dulcet and deep and rich and, you know, kind of like a...
Like shit.
Get that. Okay, yeah, okay. Like
shit. I was going to say you got that Al Green thing going on. You got that, you know, ooh, resonance.
Yeah. Can we cue up the music? White. Hold on. Let's cue up the music. Okay, Brad, now just read the telephone book to us.
Okay. I'm just going to assume that there's some like real slow, soft, sweet jazz.
No. Don't affect. Just talk normally. You're already sexy. You don't have to put a layer upon it, Brad.
All right.
Let's hear that.
Yeah, it's like putting a hat on a hat. We don't want
to
do that.
Yeah, you don't need to do that.
All right. Double hat it. All right. I'll just talk like normal. I'll just read the script. We missed you last week, Joe. How was your birthday?
It was good. Thank you. Thank you very much for being a part of it, too. Of course. Glad to see you guys.
Yeah. It was really nice to celebrate you, man. So we missed you last week on the pod, but yeah, man, it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun to listen to you guys as like simply a fan and a listener. Mm-hmm. And you guys did amazing. I was like, what do they need me for?
That was my question, Joe. I was like, did you listen? But you answered it before I asked. So that's good. That's good to know that we are also listeners of our pod.
I honestly, guys, I would listen to this pod if I wasn't on it. I really do believe that.
You don't listen to the pod?
No, I do listen to the pod. Of course I do.
Oh, but I hear what you're saying. I gotcha.
Other random pod, I think I would listen to it because I like it. But yeah. Guys, I'm very sick. In case our listeners can't tell, I am deeply,
Brad.
Deeply ill.
What are you doing, Brad? We have this podcast every Sunday. You can't be sick.
Well, the fact that I'm here, it's a testament to our listeners and to my devotion towards them. You know, like we have listeners around the world. You know, we can't let these people down. So sick or not, you know, I have to be here to do this podcast. That's how much I love our users. So to you, I apologize that I sound like this, and I'm going to do the best I can.
Yeah.
It's a real test to see if I can do this podcast at 50%. You know,
yeah. I'm going to cut you off and tell you that you can't. And we have a big episode. So, Brad, I really think we should skip the news this week.
Hang on now. We can't skip the news. I've got some big news for you guys.
Oh,
news. We cannot skip the news.
That doesn't sound 50%.
Oh.
Sounds the most I've ever heard you.
This is, all right, I'm going to mute now and cough. Hang on. Here's the news. I bought an iPhone.
Say it isn't so, Bradley.
It's done. I put my order through a few days ago last Thursday. I got a notification just this morning that it has shipped. So I bought a fancy new green colored iPhone 13 Max Pro,
green
whatever you call it.
Color. And let me paint the picture here.
Max Pro Plus.
Getting out of Google was a breeze and getting into Apple was just brutal, right? It was a miserable experience.
Oh, man, I hate to burst your bubble. The final straw was Google customer service, which, you know, I extolled many virtues on during our iOS versus Android episode for being so easy. Mm-hmm. That was a lie. I mean, I half knew it was a lie at the time. But then I had to go through Google customer service to try and repair my Pixel 6 Pro. Phone has a small crack on the back. I was very worried about trading in that phone with a small crack on it. So I went through Google customer service to try and get this fixed. I have the, you know, the warranty and the device protection coverage and all that. So here's the thing. In a nutshell, it took me several days and multiple emails and chats to determine that there is a difference between Google Store and Google Fi protection plans. I use Google Fi for my service provider, and I purchased the device through the Google Store. I have the protection plan through one of those, and they don't talk to each other. So whoever I was talking to at the Google Store did not register that I had a protection plan because I was going through the Google Store instead of Google Fi. And this is just a fail, man. I'm sorry, Dave. They're not ready to hang. Yeah. They're not ready to hang.
So are you all in now, Brad? Are you going to go out? Are you going to run out and get those, you know, those AirPod Max headphones and the MacBook and all this stuff?
Well, I mean, I've been a MacBook user for many years, and it's far superior to
PC. What about the headphones?
That wasn't what our episode was about.
Yeah. You're going to get Ethan's headphones?
Well, I got to tell you, like, much love to Ethan, but those – okay, I looked up those headphones that he was using to do our record, the AirPod Max headphones. Sounded like total garbage. We can all agree on that, right? Much love to you, Ethan, but
– they're a little tinny. They're a little tinny, yeah. But, you know, most users are. But in their defense, you'll never hear me defending Apple, but maybe they're not made to be – audit podcast microphones, but they're amazing headphones. They probably sound amazing, I would guess.
Yeah, that would be my guess too. Probably not a good microphone, or
just
I don't know.
To be fair, Ethan.
Right. Yeah. Well, I did buy not the big over the ear headphones, but I did buy the AirPod Pros, the latest AirPod Pros.
Oh man, you're all in. I'll tell you what, users, I will never turn to the dark side. I'm going to be a Google lover, not expert forever.
Well, you know, we said this on our podcast, but I fully anticipate that there's going to be a lot of pain points and bumps around. Fuck, I can't talk, guys. I'm so sorry. I fully expect there to be bumps in the road as I transition over to becoming, you know, an iPhone user. And, you know, that this pod will chronicle those.
Yeah. Well, we're here for you, Brad.
Yeah.
We are here to not support you.
Well, that's my news. So maybe we should take a quick ad break and come back with our main topic and our special guest. I love episodes where we have a special guest.
Yes, sir.
A great one. So let's take a quick break.
And we'll come back
and cover defining UX coming up next on the Sucks Podcast.
Hey, if you're a real sponsor and like what you hear and want to contact our ad sales department, or if you're just a fan, visit ourpodsucks.com. That's ourpodsucks.com to find out more. And by our ad sales department, I of course mean producer Joe. Ourpodsucks.com.
And we are back. That was weird, that thing that obviously just happened in real time.
Yeah, it's always, you know, it's so weird, Brad, now that it's normal, I think. I think we've gone. Right. So let's do it again. That was normal.
That was normal.
Yeah, that's pretty normal.
Dave, you want to tee us up here for our main segment?
I certainly do, Brad. You know, we adopt a pretty loose and broad definition of UX design on this podcast. And, you know, now that we're 419 episodes in, I thought that it was past time to bring an actual UX designer to help walk through what a true expert in this space does. And Brad, you know, like I told you earlier, I was listening to a podcast, the Nielsen Norman Group, and they talk about kind of the original, like Don Norman's definition. And it was much broader than what I imagined. You know what I mean? I think user experience, like I'm yelling at my phone and it's mostly about the UI and that whole user journey and whatnot. But they have like customer experience in there. So like when you included marketing in our Android versus iPhone, I felt kind of like, yeah, is that really, should that be in there? And then I did a little research on what UX is. I had an article and there was like 15 professionals and they all had varying definitions. And I thought, what a weird thing. Like, like if you have any other job, it seems like you can narrow it down pretty easily. So Brad, you know, that's where you come in with.
Yeah, I have my opinions. I think marketing is important to include because when you're talking about user journeys, they have to start somewhere. And typically that's marketing driven. But we have an actual person to tell us informed definitions of what UX design is today. So rather than me making stuff up,
fantastic,
we can poll this person. Lucinda Brown is an all-around generalist in all things digital and an all-around genius in the field of user experience design and other things as well. Genius is a word that I have never used on this podcast, and I reserve it exclusively for people like Lucinda Brown. Lucinda has been in the UX game for almost 20 years. Prior, she was an engineer and also brings a marketing perspective and background to design. Her alma mater is the incredible Stanford University, and she is a founding member of CHIEF, an organization designed to foster more representation of women in executive leadership. In other words, she is much, much, much smarter than us, and we are lucky and grateful to have her. Welcome, Lucinda Brown.
Oh, thank you so much. And you, you've just set a really high bar. I really think I can live up to those expectations. Very happy to be here.
Thank you for joining.
Absolutely. And we're going to have to lift the veil a little bit here because Lucinda and I work together. We work at a production company and an agency that specializes in mission-driven work and social justice, social reform, healthcare, et cetera. A lot of the work that we've done together over the past 2+ years has been focused on COVID relief for the U.S. government. And I've worked with a number of UX designers over the years, and Lucinda is light years ahead of all of them, with apologies to all of them who might be listening. Lucinda leads a growing stable of expert UX and UI designers, and is by far the finest design mind that I've ever the privilege of working with. That's too much. That's too much. That's gilding the lily, don't you think? Oh, we'll keep all that
in. Talk about her Nobel Prize as well, Brad. No, listen, he has talked you up to us off camera often. So he means every ounce of that.
Okay, well, I look forward to...
Oh, no!
Oh, no! We've lost her.
She's gone! After all that preamble. Gone!
You talked her up out of existence. She has hit the pinnacle, and then she is gone. Okay,
but they respond well to, and I respond very well to flattery and compliments.
I literally said those exact words to Dave and Joe, that you respond well to flattery.
I do. So.
Lucinda, you dropped out for the past 15 seconds, but that's okay. We got the meat of it.
All right. So, Lucinda, can you walk us through your background? When did you first know that this was your thing, that you were passionate about this particular discipline?
All right. Well, this particular discipline being user experience design, I would say 10 years ago, that's when I made that intentional switch to really focus on that. However, if you zoom out a little bit, like all my life, I've always loved making things beautiful and making things functional. And so if you look at that as a through line, I'm going to just, you asked me to share my background. Like the first stop on this train is being a yearbook editor in high school, no joke. And it's sad how often I bring that up, that to be honest with my colleagues, but it's, you know, it's a perfect comment. You know, it's like a magazine, you know, just figuring out how to communicate things with images and words. So yearbook editor, then I was I wanted to be an architecture and engineering major, but then architecture studio sucked for, it didn't work with my brain. So I became an engineering major. And then I became an engineer, which was a water resources engineer, an environmental engineer. Oh, wow. And that ended up really being a sewer engineer, which, you know, wasn't totally what I was going for, like the stuff that I learned in engineering school.
Mm-hmm. You are the second sewer engineer that I know, which is bizarre. Yes. Yeah. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted.
You're salt of the earth.
Yeah.
But, you know, the stuff I said in college was beautiful graphics and wonderful visualizations of really interesting, you know, technologies. And then I got to being an engineer, and the main science we used was shit flows downhill. And that was not where it just wasn't lighting me up. So then I pivoted to digital. And it was at the same big company, CH2M Hill, an engineering company, and they were doing intranets for big, you know, infrastructure projects. Then I spent quite a while doing marketing for startups. That's like, you know, not just digital, but print and events. So, you know, in real life experiences, and happily got to do a lot of different applications, e-commerce, cyber, computer networks. And then digital design is where I'm like, okay, I'm going to specialize. I've been sort of a generalist. I'm going to launch my own agency, build digital properties. And that was really great. But the scale of the projects I was doing was pretty small. And then finally, I'm at this fantastic agency with Brad and a lot of very like-minded, you know, powerful people doing great user experience and user interface design.
Our production company and agency is called Wondros. It's the first time I've mentioned it on this pod, so I encourage people to check us out. Lucinda, so We've done many episodes of this podcast now, and we've never truly defined what UX design is. And we've adopted, as Dave mentioned, a very broad definition of that with our topics. So I was hoping that you could help us understand, help our users and listeners understand, what is UX design, how it differs from graphic design or UI design.
Yes. And I would lean more towards the Nielsen-Norman definition of user experience. It's not necessarily digital. Like going to Disneyland is a user experience. Being a high school student is a user experience. And parts of that holistic journey involve screens that I design for. But there are a lot of, you know, great user experience design is looking at that big picture and the steps that are both online and offline from getting from point A to B.
Disneyland example is a good one. I recall when I first started to understand what UX design was, there is this example of Disneyland, where Disneyland, for you know our users who are familiar, is built like a hub. There's a central hub, which is the castle, and then there's the spokes that are the different lands. At the close of the day, they start to shut down, dim the lights for all parts of the park, except for those that are leading to the exit. I find that really interesting. So they start to illuminate the path to the exit, and that is sending subconscious signals to the user that are invisible, that it's that it's a time to leave. And I love that example.
Wow.
That's what a great user experience designer does. But to get there, they have to really... We have to understand the entire system. You know, if you've got that map in your head of the park, you know, understanding the audiences, the, you know, stakeholders. There's the Walt Disney Company. They're a stakeholder in how you're moving people through that park. But then there's also the actual guests, and they have different needs, different objectives, and mapping out the journey, figuring out requirements, you know, both business, technology, user requirements, figuring out what content's part of this experience, especially words, and how all the content hangs together and information architecture. And then, you know, I think the last stop in the UX train is wireframes. And that's like the touch point where they hand off to visual or UI designers. So that's sort of like, okay, we have our glasses off and we're kind of looking at...
For our listeners, Lucinda has removed her glasses.
For effect, yes. We're looking at kind of, you know, the low res version or the, you know, big picture kind of not very well formulated ideas, but sort of the germs of the experience. And then it goes into more and more fidelity, higher fidelity.
I'm sorry, Lucinda, let me stop you. You just mentioned the word wireframe, and I think that's probably a pretty common term in your field. But for people who aren't grounded fundamentally in this field, can you explain a little bit about what that is and how that affects your work?
Yes. To me, and there are a variety of different definitions of wireframes, to me, a wireframe is a black and white representation of the screen in the with the least amount of detail that you can pull off, you know, that will still communicate what you're trying to communicate.
Okay.
But what about, I mean, like Brad and Dave, you're both in this world. Does that sound like your definition of wireframes?
It does to me. So I think of black and white boxes, and it represents the screen only. And it does not represent the visuals at all necessarily, or the UI layer. However, there are different fidelities of wireframes that are often introduced into the mix. And sometimes high fidelity wireframes mean something specific. Low fidelity wireframes is what I think of wireframes. High fidelity wireframes could have placeholder imagery within them.
So if I can dumb it down or see if I get this right, it's more like, it's kind of like the overall plan. It's kind of like a map, like a flow chart of like
blueprint.
Yes, great. Of like where we're starting and where we want to get to, and like kind of like the if-thens along the way.
That's a user journey. like the flow, like from steps A, B, C, D. And those are also black and white boxes. But a wireframe is really a visual representation of what's on the screen rather than like a level above where it's like the screen to screen to screen to screen. Although the wire flow, that's another term I've heard where you kind of combining a bunch of different schematics, you know, low fidelity versions of the screen together to communicate that sort of series of steps.
Wireframe is what's on the page. It does not have to represent what the page looks like, but what's on it.
Yeah, I always thought wireframe included all those lines that connect them, and that's more prototyping, right? Like that's when you get into prototype.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that, by the way, the spaghetti stuff. Like, oh, it's so fun. Like, it's my brain just, how do I make all this interact and work? Like, it's
it might be like a site map or a wire journey. I think you referenced Lucinda.
Wireflow.
I call it a wire flow. You know what? It doesn't, if you go to 10 different companies, they'll have 10 different answers for that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like almost like shot boards in film. It's like sketches of what everything's going to look like.
Storyboards.
Yeah. Storyboards. Thank you. Yep. I don't know. Thank you, Brad. Your brain's working better than mine is this morning.
Shot board is not a thing.
Shot board is later at night when we're just done filming. We're going to use shot boards.
So the UI brings the wow and the UX brings the how and the why in representing the user.
Yep.
Partially how I look at it to oversimplify.
Okay. And let's talk more about the process too. I don't know that this is in the scripts. I'm going to go a little off script, Brad, if you don't mind, because we started getting into wireframes. Yeah. We started getting the, I will say scripts for you podcasters out there. Great user experience. Because before when we didn't have a script, not as good, not as good stuff. But thank you, Brad, for scripting us. But if I can go a little off script here, Lucinda, you got into the wireframes, we got into lo-fi, we got into hi-fi. Let's talk about iterating. Let's just go through the whole process, right? So now what do you do before it's handed off to developers, before the thing becomes a thing? You know, let's talk about, working in a team and who else is involved. Like, give us the big picture here.
Okay. So let's say we generally know that we're going to be, what the digital experience is going to be. We're going to help users get from point A to point B. And there's just sketches of what that might look like on a screen. So the other people who get involved in that process would be certainly copywriters, which I feel like everyone underestimates the importance of copy. And then, of course, visual designers. You've got project managers in the mix as well and product managers. But the way, I guess, starting at wireframes, you'd hand off wireframes to a visual designer and the copy person in parallel. That's typically how we do it. And then those parts, sort of the resolution or the detail level goes way up in these different processes, and then they meet in the middle, and then it all gets incorporated into full fidelity UI there. Does that answer your question?
I think so. I think I also want to know, like, after you do that, because there are several versions of this, right? Like, it's not just a one and done. Iterate is a big word, right? Like, how much do you iterate? Like, I guess until it's perfect, right? Or close enough to perfect, because it's never perfect, right?
And updating. And you're bringing up the component of product managers, which do a lot of the and UX designers as well, some of them are design researchers, where you've got a prototype and let's put it in front of users and let's see where they get confused, where there's friction that we didn't anticipate, or is the understanding of what we're trying to communicate there, and where is it falling down, and then go back, get those findings and go back to either wires or copy UI to make it better.
Yeah, that's really interesting. A couple of weeks ago, we had a product manager on, Ethan, and it's starting to paint the picture of this process with what you're describing with in the reference of the product management. It's starting to, fill in to our users and our listeners, like how this all works. And I think that we should continue this series and include UI designers, project managers, engineers, and really get a full perspective of how this pathing works to create something that is effective.
Absolutely.
So, thank you so much.
That's our explainer series. You are the first guest in our explainer series. Yes. I think you get a robe or a cigar or there's something involved that we send your way. Our producer Joe will be in charge of that. Mm-hmm. And we'll be sending it shortly. I actually have a selfish question for you. For someone like me, you know, we say we're lovers, we're not experts. I think Brad sells himself short. He's slowly becoming an expert in whatever it is he does besides his hair. And I am in the more in the lover realm, and as a graphic designer, I'm making that pivot, right? I have a film background, so I like motion, right? I like things interacting. I like things happening, right? So static design for me I love it, but I need a new challenge. So I've made that pivot. I started taking the Google course. Some of our users, have taken this as well. There's multiple boot camps out there which get reviews up and down, and it gets kind of confusing. You know, for someone like me and for our users, we call them users, by the way, our listeners, aren't we clever? So for our users who are interested in transitioning to become a UX designer, what advice would you give?
Great question. and by the way, you're in good company. You know, in terms of the the food chain in the digital world, like UX designers make more money than UI designers, who make more money than print designers. And I think it's harder, you know, like I think that there, or maybe it's not necessarily harder. There are just fewer people who have the kind of the mix of skills to be a great UX designer. So, and it's one of the things that really you need to be okay with if you're really leaving beautiful visuals for UX is that you're never going to be directly touching beautiful stuff. Maybe your wireframes are going to be gorgeous, but it's not, you're never touching the final experience. And I find it very, that's why I love working with UI designers. It's much more satisfying to make something beautiful, than to make a middle, you know, something that's midway in that work stream. But to answer your other question, UX design resources are everywhere. Like you mentioned the Nielsen Norman group. I think that is a fantastic place if you have a question to find answers. I also love Jared Spool.
Okay.
He's another, you know, he's got this center group. I think that's another like boot camp kind of education center. He also has this fantastic all you can learn website. So that it's just lots of different talks about very specific UX subjects, which when I've been stumped, I'm like, okay, I just need to hear from some experts. Also the podcasts. I'm sure there's lots of podcasts that, you know, anytime I need to know something about something fast, I'll just find a podcast and just...
To be clear, for UX design, this is the podcast. Best one. Yeah, yeah, it's the only one, Joe.
Actually, you're right,
Dave. I would also add on to that you know it doesn't have to be either or. So there are UX/UI designers, and what Lucinda and I do is often we evaluate like the percentage split between each in terms of proficiency. So, you know, you can have a UX and UI designer, and sometimes a person will be a little bit more geared toward the UI or a little bit more geared toward the UX. And of course, that doesn't have to be static. That can always evolve. So you can start by having like a slight proficiency in UX, and then as you progress in your career and your training, you can increase that split to be more focused and more heavy on UX.
Got it. To get into this, to the weeds real fast, because I saw a tweet the other day. I'm the social guy too, so I'm all in the social media. This guy writes, UX is not UI, UX is not UI, like 1,000 times, and then it generated a lot of discussion. So for our users who are new to this, to tell the difference in the jobs really quickly.
I think UX is, you know, that it's a system. It's understanding and articulating a system for agreement and understanding that leads you into UI. So, you know, that parable about the three different people who are touching different parts of the elephant. Yes. You know, one of them touches the trunk, one of them's got the leg and the tail or whatever. So I think UX is like it's creating lenses to capture and accurately represent this full system. Like, who's going to make money off this? Who's going to use it? What are they like? Where are they? What's step, you know, what's, they're going from point A to point B. What does that look like? Where are the friction points? And how, you know, just the, not just the visual, it's really the whole system, especially the business part of what's happening and what you're trying to solve.
Okay.
It's a kind of a holistic approach to everything from like where it starts, the stakeholders that are involved, mm-hmm. who's going to end up receiving it. Just there's a, it really takes a broad overview of a lot of disciplines, I think is what you're saying.
Yes. And I think the hardest thing to find is people who are really great visual, you know, creating beautiful visual things. Oftentimes they don't care about words. And words are so important in these examples. People, you know, there are people who only learn through words. There are people who are purely visual learners and people who kind of absorb information through a mix of both. And you need to design for all those types of learners.
Cool. All right. So Lucinda, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, if you're moving from UI to UX, you have to be okay with all the rest of your life is black and white. That's like something that I think a lot of people, unless you're a hybrid UX UI, a lot of people don't realize that if you are really going into the strategy and the systems thinking, most of your output is doesn't delight. It might delight a developer. It might delight, you know, a product manager, but not so much, you know, it's not gorgeous.
So you're saying I'm not getting into the hi-fi part. That would be a UI?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, okay, a high fidelity wireframe, yes, but it's still black and white and it's still like a, you know, here's how this drop down works, blah, 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 blah. It's less gorgeous and less scintillating.
So, Lucinda, our podcast is nothing if it's not an excuse for us to bitch about terrible experiences. We love to complain. So, do you have some examples of things that just make your blood boil as a designer that we could talk about?
I do. I have many thoughts.
I thought you might.
I definitely, I'm sorry to say, but there is a lot of UX problems in government websites. And a lot of our clients are government organizations, which maybe that's why they hire us. But I, you know, certainly not the things we work on. Well, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, let's say, in the government space, the .gov area, that could really use and do really wonderful things for humanity by improving the user experience. So two examples that come to mind are the trademark and patent office. Ooh. So that's like a place where you can look up all the trademarks that have been and patents. I usually focus on trademarks that have been filed. And it is just, you show up and it's a wall of copy, you know, with five different options. All this terminology, legal terminology that doesn't make sense. That one's really painful. Another painful one is the City of LA business license website.
Ooh, so I've not been on this one.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
It's another like wall of text, overwhelm, you know, it's unintentionally exclusionary to non-native speakers, to people who just, you know, maybe not super high literacy. And if you're really trying to open up the American dream to people, the City of LA business license website is where a lot of immigrants go.
I have a non sequitur here to add on to this. So as you were speaking, I typed into my Google search bar, City of Los Angeles, and it auto-filled business license office.
What?
So that is either, you know, the Google algorithm listening in real time or that this is just...
Oh my gosh, mine did as well. What? So that is
creepy.
I'm a know-it-all. I'd like to posit a hypothesis for why that is.
Yes.
We are in tax filing times, and there's a deadline around February for filing taxes. If you have any 1099 income, if you have any income that you get not through a corporation, an employer, then you have to file there, and it is just brutal. Oof.
I will say the parking violation is the first one that came up on my phone.
That makes it. Actually, that one's not so bad to me because, you know, I have to use that site quite a bit to pay parking citations.
Oh, Brad.
They make it pretty easy for me to pay that $65 parking fine three times a year.
Wow.
I those like are great examples of Senda.
And I love that you came with very specific examples. Like you really, these really bother you.
Well, the common thread is that this is these are resources that people need. This is not, you know, non-consequential stuff. You know, there's a better way for me to put that. But these are vital resources that people have to use, and they go to these destinations and they're unable to get the information that they need easily. And especially if you're like English as a second learner or you're new to this country, as you're, as you mentioned, Lucinda, this is very problematic and it's putting people at a disadvantage, people who need the help. So, it's.
And well, I'd like to say, if I could jump in with what you just said and going back to like, what should people getting into the field, like do things they should do. One thing I heard, I think it was also from the Nielsen Norton Group podcast, not to plug another pod, but it's a great pod. they said to like, look around, poke around for stuff, you know, like you saw that site and just see, like, if you don't have like something you can work on, you know, like mock something up for something like that. So I may tackle that one.
So yeah, would you fix that for us, Dave?
I will. Then I'm going to sell it to you guys. That you could sell it to them.
Very good. All right. So if we can just fix all those problems, I think that that you know this group is well positioned to do that.
So we can sell these. So then we won't have a podcast anymore, Brad.
We won't have to because we'll be millionaires. I'm just kidding. You can't make money from the government.
hey, Brad, are the rest of us going to get to complain? Are we gonna? You know.
No, let's play the game Sucks or Doesn't Sucks. Hit the theme.
Sucks. Not suck.
As always, we're going to bring up some items and go around round robin and play Sucks or Doesn't Sucks. I've picked some topics for us this week. We will start with Lucinda, and then we will go in clockwise order. So Lucinda, Joe, Dave, and myself. First item. Arranging bookshelves by color. Arranging bookshelves by color. Sucks or doesn't sucks, Lucinda?
Doesn't suck. It just makes me so happy.
Joseph.
My library is organized by descending ISBN numbers.
What?
Alert.
Wow.
I'm kidding. It's pretty random. It's pretty random. So actually, colors might work great. Might work great.
Dave Walsh.
Okay, I'm pretty OCD, and that's a whole other level of OCD. That sucks to me. I could not color. Did you say color?
By color.
Are books different color? Like, how would I know that? Okay. I could see the happiness, Lucinda. As far as like being organized and knowing what book is what, I'm going long here. I'll try it. Yeah. For now, it sucks, but I may come back to this and say it doesn't suck.
You know what? I think it's super bougie and it makes me happy.
And there's a UX reason why it works for me, because I do remember what color the spine is. That's how I don't remember the author. Yeah, I remember what it looks like in my head. But that's how I file things away in my head. It probably works differently. Certainly in producer Joe's world, he's thinking numbers and
I'm going doesn't suck as well. So there we go. The next one. CNN.com ads. If you know what I'm talking about, they autoplay with the volume on. Sucks or doesn't suck, Lucinda Brown?
As a user, I would definitely say suck. As a corporation, I would say necessary evil, but I still say we're users, right? Sucks.
Joseph.
Absolutely sucks. Also, they have that like drop down like ad that you could barely even read anything. Top drops down. There's something playing on the side. I'm like, is this like, you know, some kind of weird spam site or is it CNN? Like, let's be real here.
Yeah. David.
Brad, you're kind of leading the witness here. Of course it sucks. And Lucinda, I would say from a business standpoint, depending on how they implement it, like it could suck for them too, because there have been times I've just shut down a site. Like I'll get the commercial that comes before the thing to play. And then the thing won't play. And then there's ads, like Joe said, all over the place. I'm just like, I'm out. So yeah, sucks. Super sucks.
Of course it sucks. Especially in a work from home environment where, you know, I'm on Zoom all day long. I'm in meetings just like this one all day long, every half an hour. And what that means is I cannot browse CNN for fear of that autoplay full volume going on when I'm on, you know, when I'm unmuted, when I'm on a meeting. So that means that I'm visiting CNN less often and seeing fewer ads. CNN, fix this, especially in a work from home environment. Totally sucks.
Yeah.
All right. Finally, as always, Twitter. Lucinda.
Here we go.
I'm an NA. I guess it sucks. I just don't, it's not my medium. So I'm not into it.
Yep. Joseph?
Sucks. Always sucks for Joe. Always. He's not going to give it. You know, I love it. It is what you bring to it. I'm going to say it time and time again, and I'm getting a lot of good out of it lately. So
I'm going to keep this in. Every week, we're going to play the Twitter game. And for me, it continues to evolve, and it continues to skew more positive, as there are real-world implications, and the Ukraine situation still continues to be driven largely by, the positive news is coming out of Twitter. So I continue to have this skew slightly more positive, where 2 months ago, this would have been a hard no, hard pass, very negative.
He was very against it. Brad, if I could take the mic back here on this one, I will say, as our social media person, it kind of does suck for me now, because growing a Twitter following organically, I've traditionally used it as a news curation, right? So it's not sucked for me, but now trying to grow this pod and be out there, oh man, it's brutal. It's brutal. And the UX design community, they're very, they're a very interesting group. I don't want to shoot ourselves in the foot here.
Aren't they?
They're kind of dry. You know, there's some funny ones out there, and I got to tip my hat. But ultimately, it's a lot of self-promoting and asking questions and really, really nerdy jokes.
Sure.
So I don't know if we fit in. Do we fit in, Brad? Or are we bringing something new to the table for this audience?
Well, we have thousands of Twitter bots who are following us. So at this point in the podcast, I'd like to put in a little content for our Twitter bot followers. And that was exclusive content for our Twitter bot followers. Hope you all enjoyed that and continue to follow us.
Oh, I get it. Is that a thing? Good, Brad. That's
is
good.
That a thing? That's good?
Funny. That was a good bit. Look at you. Funny guy. I love it.
All right. Well, we're going to keep this podcast moving as we enter the final stretch here. We're going to talk about moments of UX Zen, aka unicorn moments. These are moments of great UX that we've encountered over the week. We've talked about things that piss us off. Now it's time to talk about things that are great. Lucinda, do you have anything that you've brought today? If not, that's okay.
I do. And I've just pulled it up on my phone. It is step.com, which is a banking for teens product. Ooh. It comes from the fine people at Stripe, which is a payment platform, more B2B. And I have a teen who has a new Step card. So I've gone off screen, the actual card that comes in the mail that she customized, the accent color on with her name on it.
Cool.
Is fantastic. And I have an app, she has an app, and then the website does a really great job of explaining it, having the right amount of content before you actually install the native app on your phone.
That's wonderful. As someone who never learned about money and is now feeling the effects of that as an adult, that's fantastic. And I hope that my daughter can use that platform when she gets old enough to, learn about, financial freedom.
Yeah, I'm going
to
check that out. That's awesome. Check that out for my son. Absolutely.
Yo, you have one.
I'm going to check that out for me.
Right.
I do actually have one this week. Well, last week when you guys were recording and I was off, gallivanting about for my birthday, I was actually at the Getty Center, which in and of itself is an incredible piece of design from the architecture standpoint. It's, I was there with my father, who's an architect, and, just really appreciating it through his eyes. But from a user experience, you guys almost covered it when you brought up Disneyland earlier. There were certain things I was noticing about the layout. There aren't garish signs like queue here or line starts here. There's just subtle design cues, even just as simple as getting on and off the tram, because they get off on different sides. I remember when we're leaving, walking up to the right side and going, there's no sign that said this is the side to board on. There was an overhang that kind of instinctively guided you. Mm-hmm. And so I loved that, because it was the user design was part of the overall design. It was part of the art of the whole thing, avoiding garish signs and just being intuitive. I thought that was a really good example of user experience design.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. To all of our users and listeners who don't live in Los Angeles, what are you even doing? Come to LA. You need to live here. Go to the Getty Center.
Right.
I feel sorry for you.
Yes.
I'm kidding.
I should explain that. The Getty Center is an art museum that was designed in 1997 by, is it Richard Meyer?
97? Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought it was like ancient. It's
no,
it's
no,
that,
no.
It's,
the, oh, huh. The J. Paul Getty Trust funded it to the tune of like $1.5 billion. Mm-hmm. It overlooks, it's on a hilltop on the west side of LA, so you can see the ocean. It's beautiful.
I've
mean,
been
just
there.
Yeah, I was gonna say, just if you're into design and beauty, and just look up pictures of it, because it really is a work of the building itself is a work of art that houses works of art.
I got to tell you, their art, their curated art collection is maybe the least interesting part about the Getty Museum. To me.
It's possible, yes.
I like their collections, and they have some, interesting, sometimes, revolving collections that come in, but I go for the architecture. I go for the design of the facility itself and for the views and for the experience of being there. David, do you have anything this week?
If not, okay. Brad, you know, I'm the complainer. Good UX. You don't see. Come on. I mean, I will say one thing. I've gone back to the gym without a mask.
Gross.
And it's good though, because it feels good to breathe again. I'm a big mask person. I'm not, an anti-masker. I love, I was in double masked at the height of this, right? And I would get annoyed when people wouldn't have one, but it does feel good to return to normal. And I say this now, and when I have COVID next week, I will retract this good UX experience. Indeed. That's all I got, Brad.
Okay. My moment of UX, and is not really UX, but I do want to give a shout out to the Dead Eyes podcast. Some of our users might have heard of the Dead Eyes podcast.
Good stuff.
But, in summation, this is a podcast about failure. And it's a subject that I'm very interested in. Failure is one of my favorite subjects and one that I'm familiar with. So, failure is how we learn, how we evolve, how we grow. And this is a podcast where that is the theme. So I'm super interested in this. And I want to give a shout out to Connor Ratcliffe and his podcast. So check it out. The shortest possible version of the story is, in 1998, Connor was cast in Tom Hanks' series Band of Brothers on HBO. It was a bit part, but it was going to be one that changed his life. So right before filming was to start, he gets a phone call saying he has to re-audition for Tom Hanks, who thinks he has dead eyes. So this prompts a journey where he has to go and re-audition for Tom Hanks personally, and then he is removed from the cast. He is cut from Band of Brothers because he has dead eyes.
Brad, you suggested this to me. Oh, sorry.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. 20 years later, he starts to do this podcast where he's examining what happened. And now, 3 seasons in, he starts to, do this investigative report this series of what actually happened that day. And does he have dead eyes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. 3 seasons in, the podcast culminates with him interviewing Tom Hanks. He's on the couch and they hash it out.
Don't tell it. No, Yuri, that's a spoiler alert. Don't tell anymore.
Okay. Because you
suggested this
to
me.
To it.
No, and you told me to listen to the first 2 episodes at least, and then the last one. And I'll tell you, as props to this podcast, I'm tempted to skip to the last one, but I he has such great guests. Like Ryan Johnson is on the one I'm listening to now, and it's like
director
just amazing.
Of the best Star Wars movie ever, Ryan.
Yeah,
Johnson,
sure. Yeah, we could have a debate about that, but
it's too late
anyway,
in the pod to have that conversation.
Anyway,
but you're right,
podcast.
He has incredible guests.
Good podcast.
And the subject of failure, and when we talk about design and building things, is an integral part of the process. So
bring it back. Good
that,
man.
To bring it back to UX and our podcast, you have to fail to design great things. And so that's my recommendation this week. Pausing again for the printer. What the hell is going on?
Does it say "I love you, Dad" and when you pull out the piece of paper? Because that would be sweet.
It says, "Why aren't you playing with me? Why do you do this every Sunday morning instead of spending time with me, Dad?" That's weird. All right, Lucinda Brown, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been an illuminating conversation and such a pleasure for us. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much.
It was really fun. You guys are really wonderful pod hosts.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you, Lucinda.
And that is our episode. Thank you for listening to Sucks. We are wishing you health, a well-designed life, and good experiences.
Oh, Brad. Brad, you don't know this about yourself, but you do a lot of like breathy mouth snapping, like right before you talk, there's always a like that and stuff. And
oh, nice.
Yeah. So really? I'm intimately aware of all of
smacking
your
smacking my lips and shit.
Yeah. You smack your lips just like Chewbacca's dad.
No, that's the most disturbing thing in the history of television.
Oh,